Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of...
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and welcome back from that glorious weekend of... In Chicago, it was 30, and then it was 60, and it was right. I don't know what the hell's going on here, but it must be global warming. Where's the president? Let me talk to him. But, a good weekend in sports, and go Cubbies. But, when we look at the overall picture that we have to look at, and it don't look good, as they say. There's so many interesting things happening. Okay, and one of the things I look at is the screwing of the Americans. I'll name it the screwing of America. Okay, and you keep hearing the conversations and the words to the Federal Reserve and Obama and everybody and Clinton. And man, we're really growing. It's great. I created 10 million jobs. And of course I go bullshit, but I mean, do we really, believe, does anybody really believe that the markets and the economy are in good shape? And, I know these political deals bring out tremendous fervor and you just unbelievable heat, on everybody, because we got to have our candidate in there. And again, I'm more for re-breaking down the whole system, because as far as I'm concerned, both parties suck. There needs to be a better way to do this. And the truth of the matter is the economy and business should be under one party and all the other stuff. Because again, there's a lot of argument there. Now, you vote for things for other reasons, and I won't get into them here. But it doesn't make a lot of sense when you really think about it. I mean, there's fiscal, and there's things that make the country run, and then there's the other ideas that people have. But do we really believe that this whole deal works? And I just tell you that it doesn't. It's not me. It's not my anti-Fed status. I mean, I wasn't always an anti-Fed guy, but when I watch them work, I can't be excited about what they do. But I think the biggest kicker here is that, when you let the banks kind of run amok, and you can say what you want, okay? And for my banker friends out there, I don't mean to insult you, but I mean, the big banks are screwing America. I mean, that really is what it comes down to. I mean, think about it. If you, had a business that you could buy all your inventory and take a big shot, and if it didn't work, well, okay, I'm too big to fail, so I don't have to worry about it, because what am I going to do? I'm going to get bailed out by the government, and who's the government going to get the money from? They're going to get it from, you and me. And that is always the issue and the problem I have with the whole situation, is that we... the innocent taxpayers, okay, get stuck, and we end up having to pay for it, which is why they keep trying to get more inflation in this thing, so we can pay more of the baggage of what they've done. Now, I don't know. I think that it's a bad deal for Americans. I think it's a bad deal for everybody, and that's where I don't understand why we can't let the markets be the markets. I mean, I think 1913, which was the year of the Fed, it will go down as a very dark period in American history, because it's when the world's largest Ponzi scheme started, or legalized Ponzi scheme. I mean, and that is the day our dollars started to decline and not have true value. So when you look at the markets and you go, these things are so overvalued, but yet they go up. Yet there's buyers that step in and want us to and continue to buy. And again, look, you can do what you want with your own money, but we know. Okay, again, I'm not a disaster guy. I'm not a, you know, the world's collapsing. The United States is going to collapse. I'm just a guy saying, hey, what do we know for a fact? We know that market corrections are part of the market. We know that market collapses are part of the market. Okay, we know it's all part of the economy. But for some guy to come out and say that we're not in a recession, which is why I think these economists have no clue as to what they're doing. I mean, you know, what? Who would have ever thought, okay, that I asked this question, what are the probabilities of the most educated people in any room are actually the dumbest? Okay. And it's an interesting question because there's many, many people out there who are very book smart, very well read and very well educated on the stuff that they've learned and the statistics. But in real life, we don't have that. You know what we have right now in real life? We've got the entire farming community getting destroyed. Okay. Now, I know they have some insurance and things like that. But the bottom line is these guys are out humping, you know, 80, 90 hours a week, 100 hours a week during season. Okay. And they're not going to get paid this year. Okay. They're going to be lucky, you know, if they only lose a little bit. And, you know, this scenario that has been created by the government, by the Fed, the private Fed, by the way, are supposed to be private. We know it is, but, you know, do they actually operate independently? Is destroying the entire free market system. Okay. And, you know, I get into this always this too big to fail stuff. And that's why I think that the big banks should be broken up. I think they have too much power and too much control, okay, on America. And, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, I think you'll realize and I think you'll agree that overall they have way too much power, okay? Because, you know, now, I mean, what are we doing? We're just digging a deeper and deeper hole for everybody, okay? I mean, you know, if you look at it, okay, the Fed is extremely late to whatever they do. I mean, they're just ridiculous, okay? You know, what will be their legacy, okay? Well, it's going to be asset bubbles. That's going to be their legacy. Look at the last 40 years or 36 years, and what have we seen created? And asset bubbles over and over again, okay? And it just it makes no sense, okay? Because, you know, what we really need is a good old-fashioned ass whipping. We need a good old-fashioned cleanse. You know, you need a high colonic, right? You gotta give a good old-fashioned beat 'em up. Let the strong survive, okay? Because, you know, you guys now predicting a recession, and I stand by, we never left the recession in the first place. So what recession are they talking about? Okay. And it's concerning. It's disturbing at what we have and what we see. Now, again, I'm an American. I love America. I think it's the greatest place on earth, and it will straighten out. Okay. But we do have a lot of concerns, and we need to let things do what they're going to do. And that goes in all walks, not just the stock market. Everything is interlinked in some way. But again, we know the economy and the market don't necessarily be in the same position. And we have to get past that where we actually work on a real system, okay, and not a manipulated, trying to make things happen system. And that, to me, is a problem, okay? But, you know, hey, that's just me. I'm just one guy that gets really angry about it. But, you know, hey, we're in our last hedging class, and we're all taken care of, so we're all happy there. And when you miss a show, you have to go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day. Got to help me out, help a brother out. And in the meantime, check out bubbatrading.com as well. Always great stuff for you there. In the meantime, I'm going to step out here for a break. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz, and I'll be right back after the break. The
Bubba Show, Todd Bob. Mostly an A.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the one, the only, the extremely talented, the one who brings good things to life, Jane King, Lila Max Media, and the Ka-Ching Report. What's up, Jane King?
Hey, Todd. Good morning to you.
And very good morning to you. And, you know, Jane, we've got just so many things going on, and it's an amazing, you know, with the election and with, you know, there's like never a never-ending story of dirt on both parties. I can't remember a dirtier election in my lifetime, and I can't remember where both candidates were like so ridiculously dirty that it was unbelievable. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, it is one ugly stew of stuff. Gosh, where do I start? I mean, there's so much. I guess, you know, two things, overriding themes of what's been going on, especially over the past week or so, is that I think the country is not headed to great places, and I'm very concerned about that. And I think that, you know, I think that we have seen, like, a political bias in the media beyond belief. I mean, not all of it is undeserved, but I just feel like all these major institutions are just so corrupt, and people just don't know who or what to trust anymore, and it's just really sad.
Now, you are in the media, but you came from, you know, corporate media, kind of. I mean, you were with Bloomberg, and you were around. Now, when did the media become so far left or so liberal?
Well, they have been. Now, I don't find it as much in local news as I do on the national news level. But, I mean, as long as I've been involved in national news, you know, with CNN and Bloomberg, it leans left, and sometimes crazy so. Now, New York local media is very left, but just New York. But, I mean, I could give you all kinds of examples. I mean, I've been, you know, with photographers who've had Che Guevara stickers on their stuff. And, you know, in editorial meetings where people are making fun of Rush Limbaugh. And, I mean, it just, you know, it goes on and on. And it's just so deeply, they believe that they're so right, and they just know how it is and how it should be, how the world should be and how the country should be. And it is their duty to tell everybody that. And everybody else is just behind or uneducated or, you know. And look, I mean, it makes me mad because I feel like there's a lot of people in the media who don't understand what this country went through. Like, they don't, they're highly educated, but they don't realize the sacrifices that were made and the ugliness that went on, you know, in the 1700s and the 1800s and what built this country. And they just, you know, everything is just toe the line on what they've been taught at school. And, you know, I had a, you know, reporter ask me a couple of things that I thought were shocking once. One was, why didn't Japan retaliate with their own nuclear weapons in World War II? And I was like, well, they didn't have them. That's why it was a brand new bomb. And, you know, and people have asked me just all kinds of things, like just a real lack of historical context to what got us here. What got us here wasn't always pretty, but that's what built the United States. And things aren't going to be perfect, and we have to learn, you know, to work around them and try to improve things. But, you know, I just don't, I mean, I don't know what to say. It's a little bit brainwashing. I was having dinner with some friends last Friday night, and their kids go to a very liberal school in New York, in Brooklyn. And they were talking about how they actually had William F. Buckley's grandson, I believe, or maybe son, come to speak at the school. And they were very happy about that because they felt like the kids are just brainwashed. And they, you know, and I don't think these two were particular conservatives, but they were just happy there was something else for them to learn, just a different point of view. And I just think, you know, I think it starts with education. And I guess I don't think the conservative movement is doing a very good job of getting their message out either.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the dumbest things I've ever seen was this, you know, whole abandonment of Trump. You know, I understand wherever he's coming from. Again, I don't, you know, say, but, you know, they basically, in my opinion, have trashed the party, and the Republican Party is going to have to come back as something different in another life, because this whole election cycle for them has been just one disaster after another. What do you think?
Yes. You know, and it's, yeah, they haven't handled this well at all. And there's just so much hand-wringing and lack of leadership. And, like, I think, you know, Paul Ryan could have come out and been like, you know, about Donald Trump. Look, you know, I agree with his comments. I think they're despicable. But I'm supporting him because I believe in his issues on free trade, and I believe in his policy positions on foreign policy. And, you know, he could have come out and, like, balanced things. And instead, he was just real way. And, I mean, everybody is just, I don't know. There's just a real lack of leadership. There's a lack of bravery. I guess we wait for the next generation to take leadership, and hopefully they can have some more common sense. I mean, it's so crazy, like, what we're seeing. I mean, people are absolutely hair on fire, hysterical. And it's not just politics, but it's like, just look at some of these, you know, creepy clowns. I mean, everybody's freaking out about, I mean, come on. And like, service animals. People are bringing turkeys and monkeys on planes because they need emotional support. I mean, it's just silly, like, the stuff that goes on in our country right now. I don't know. I'm speechless.
Well, no, I know. And I know you graduated from Purdue, correct?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You graduated from Purdue, correct?
That was, I did. Yes.
Okay. Now, were you in a sorority when you went to Purdue?
I was in a sorority.
I mean, because now, you know, obviously I have two kids that are in college, and, you know, they're trying to eliminate the Greek life now. Okay.
Okay.
There's so many restrictions.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. Okay.
I mean, but do you agree or disagree with that?
I don't. I actually learned a lot in the sorority. Now, I can kind of see, you know, how some things need to be changed. You know, there was an awful lot of drinking, and everything revolved around parties. You know, there were social events that, you know, things went on that shouldn't have gone on. But I also, in the sorority, you know, had study partners. We learned manners and etiquette. There was a lot of things. We had, you know, professional speakers come in and talk to us about resume writing and looking for a job. And, you know, there was a lot of positive things about it. So, I still keep in touch with a lot of my sorority sisters. I was in Portland last year, and thanks to Facebook, some of my sorority sisters thought I was in Portland and contacted me, and we all got together for dinner and had a wonderful time. So there's a lot of social connectedness that I think is really important for a sorority. So I just think, you know, some altering of rules and a little bit of changing of things would fix the problem, and we don't need to get rid of everything out there on college campuses, which is a whole other issue.
Well, I mean, that's just why I think that we've become too politically correct, and everybody's worried about getting sued. And do you actually think that if you eliminate the Greek life, they're going to eliminate the drinking on campus, or just going to drink somewhere else? I mean, you know, I believe that they should work more towards, because I think that's where a lot of the problems come in the whole society, is because you regulate these kids all the way up, and you bring them into that. The whole world is about regulation. And it just, to me, I didn't go to college, but to me, it's like a joke. And I'm like, I can't wait till my kids are done, because, you know, my son was the president of fraternity, and the kid almost had a nervous breakdown while he was a president. So, I mean,
jeez, yeah, that's way too early to be dealing with that stress. Well, you know, I just think it comes down to just having the right amount of procedures, the right amount of adults who care, and really put the effort into helping kids and preparing them. I mean, there just seems like there's so, I don't know why this is, but it just seems like there's so many people who are just like, just let me come and show up and do what I have to do and then go. And there's just not enough people who really, really care about it. And I don't know. That's what we need. It's just really good, committed teachers, really good, committed adults involved in education. That would be helpful.
And that's what you're doing. That's your new financial. You're teaching kids financial stuff. So that's a good thing. You're on the right track. So we look at the markets, and they continue to just kind of languish around, and we continue to have the Fed talking all this stuff. You got any thoughts here in this overall world? I mean, what's going on financially?
Well, it was interesting to see China's trade data numbers and how that kind of spooked everybody that, oh, maybe, you know, things aren't as great out there. I mean, gosh, the Fed has been sitting on zero interest rates for so long. We're about due for another cycle of a downturn, and here we go again. So, I don't know. I guess we're on track, and mortgage rates have been inching up under the impression that they're going to raise rates in December, but I don't think they're committed to that. I think they're going to wait till the very last minute before they decide whether to raise interest rates or not.
Well, I think they should. I think they should be committed because I think they've done a very poor job at doing this, and always seem to end up with this more regulation. And you know, I mean, just one quick last point here. It looks like Deutsche Bank the EU kind of let them slide on the stress tests and the banking. What do you think about that?
Well, here we go again. I mean, this is what we've been through since Hank Paulson decided to let Lehman go. This is what we've been dealing with. Propping up the banks, propping up the economy artificially. Nobody's accountable. And,
Friend Jane King, telling it like it is. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Margie said, Roy, you ain't...
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz bringing back the expert, the man, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And what do you say, Matt?
I'm good. How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing good. So, you know, last week we had a little bit of action, and it was an interesting week to begin with, I think, Matt. You know, I know you don't look at this stuff, but, you know, Monday was Columbus Day, and then, like, Tuesday, Wednesday was, like, part of Yom Kippur for sure, Wednesday. So we had some quiet action on Thursday. They really tried to take him down, and... we got down to that, I think, you know, a little bit of a support area, about 2120 in the S&P, and we kind of popped a little bit. What did you think of the action last week overall?
I think, you know, it's good. I mean, I thought it was fairly bearish. I mean, we broke some support, and particularly in the Dow, when I'm looking at the Dow, we broke a support area, we fell below, we rallied back up on Friday to the underside of that support, and then touched it and then fell away. So that's for me, that's perfect. That's what I want to see if we're going to see more downside ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think we're going down. The problem is it's been a challenge, and, you know, we talk about, you know, the volatility and whatever, but, you know, basically, you know, volatility is still well below its 20-year moving average, which is, you know, interesting, and until we can get some consistent, you know, volatility that really mutes a lot of the action and allows, you know, whether they be pros or amateur traders, it allows them to keep jumping back in because, you know, everybody knows that they're dependent on what's going to happen here. But so your long-term view, I mean, you made a great call on the bonds, you know, I don't know, it was about 7 or 8 weeks ago now, and they've done nothing but go down since 177 in the 30-year. I know you play the 10, but... that's been just outstanding, and of course, you know, interest rates are starting to rise through the bond market. So, what's your call here now? What are you looking for in the? I guess we'll use the S&P or the Dow, either one. What are you looking for your first target on the downside? Now that I know that we know you're bearish, but what's your first target here now?
Sure. Well, Dow, I actually have a cleaner target in, and the problem is that it's rising rapidly. So it's you know, most of my targets aren't just flat lines. They're usually, you know, sloped lines. In this case, I'm looking for 17,175 in the Dow. So that'd be almost 1,000 points lower but that's only if we, you know, plummeted straight to it in a day. Otherwise, that target, 17,175, it rises by about 20 points per day. So I've you know, looked at the slope, and basically every day that goes by, I just add 20 points to that target, and that will be my target when it hits.
So a year from now, if we haven't hit it yet, it'll be right there, right?
That's right. That's right. We'll be there already. Yeah, actually, if you take it all the way out to, I think, late December, where it would be right at the price of where we are now. But the you talked about bonds. I want to mention that. We're at a level here where, if you look at all the indicators, the shorter-term indicators, they're oversold. I think we're in a good spot for a bounce. Again, this is just a short-term bounce. I don't, you know, I think, you know, the long-term, you know, the long-term pattern's probably still in place. But I, you know, I want to see what happens right here. I think we should see some sort of bounce here. And if we don't, then if it wasn't going to bounce here for me, it wasn't going to bounce here or slightly lower, then it wasn't going to bounce at all.
So your long-term macro call was the top of that market was in, so we're in. So now you played that from the short side through a couple of different ways. Now, when you get this, like this short-term buying signal in here, or, you know, oversold, maybe we should get a short-term bounce, will you cover that short position and go long for, you know, whatever period of time it is, or will you just do something else, leave the short alone and kind of do the, you know, long-short type on the same position?
Yeah, I'll probably keep, you know, the core position there, and then, you know, maybe do something with options where, because we're long. So the thing is, we're long puts as well. So that, you know, long-term puts. So what we'll probably do is sell short-term puts, something along those lines, where we hedge a little bit of the downside for the short-term.
Right. So you'll typically, if you have a big, like this was a pretty big macro call, right, the bonds?
Right.
So on a big call like that, you're not going to look to be trading that back and forth. You're looking for that to be fairly significant. It's had a nice, obviously, a fairly significant move already, but you're looking for that. So you'll adjust around there and make some trades that will allow you to benefit in the short term from the a short-term rally, cover up some of the losses you might take on your long-term position, but also keep you in case it continues to plummet. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the plan. And I know you do a lot of that, and I think it's the right way of approaching it. I don't want to get out of our core positioning, potentially get whipsawed. We can do this with options.
No, I mean, again, I think one of the biggest mistakes traders make is they try to make too many guesses on direction, and they try to move around too much where, you know, if you've got a core short like you do, you adjust around it and make a long-term play in the short term, keeping your long-term position in tow. I mean, you know, I always teach everybody when, you know, we play, like, let's say we're playing a consolidation range. And let's say we're playing the 2120 to 2190, which is kind of where I have the S&P marked, right? So mm-hmm. We got the 2120, and I wasn't getting long. I made it clear I'm not buying the indexes under almost any circumstances. However, I expected a bounce in there, and I might, you know, look to do something in a very short term to capitalize on that short term bounce we might get. But I'm trying to really hope that breaks from there, and the support doesn't hold, and then we plummet, because nobody knows where the actual number is going to be. We have a good idea. That's what you do. You bring general ideas to the market, and you play a mathematical probability based on the charts you use. But, you know, again, if you're in, and you're in a direction, whichever way it is, you're looking for that, and the potential will eventually, it will break one way or the other. And obviously, if it breaks up from there, you've done the short-term position, which will take care of your long-term and probably yield you some profit, versus if it continues to plummet, then the options won't cost you much, and you'll just continue to make more money, right?
That's it. You got it. Yeah.
You know, I know that. See how fast I was with that? So, you know, we look around, and of course, oil is, I know you were a little bit not bullish, but looking for oil to get to 52 and change. And, you know, I was bearish, and I stayed bearish last week, and, you know, it worked out okay. I mean, it wasn't great, but it's stubbornly staying up here, even though a lot of the other things are not. What's your take on oil here?
You know, we're My old oil target is a declining one, and now it's roughly 52, just slightly above 52, like 52.30, and it declines by about 10 cents per day. So we're in the ballpark of where we should see a top. You know, we've been getting short. We were already short, and we've been adding to that short. We'll probably add a little bit more this week. Also, what's interesting is the commercials are just, you know, drastically increased their short position. They're now as short as they were in July of 2014, back when oil was trading at $105 per barrel. So, you know, they're the same short position on the same size as they did back then. And we're, you know, we're obviously, you know, $50, more than $50 lower.
Yeah, and that was that particular position, I will say, because I remember that like it was yesterday. That was like stealing in there because of the, you know, the backwardation contango model. You know, we at that point, oil was, you know, trading in July. Oil was trading at like 107 or 114, whatever it was, one of those numbers up there. And December oil that, at that time was trading at 90 something. So you were hearing, seeing that was purely a fear-driven, fear-based rally, which, you know, if you're looking for a short and you have a good position, and then knowing that, you know, that this pattern's laying out, it's a pretty much of a no-brainer. Obviously, of course, the fear has to play out faster. But, you know, I see that, you know, all the time. And I could see a great reason to be short oil here because I don't see what's really changed. Other than a few buyers have stepped in, but I look at it, buyers step in because of OPEC, a little short squeeze. I think the hurricane helped keep it higher. I think the bombing, you know, the missile bombing on the naval ships helped keep it higher. But once that, you know, we realize it's just another bunch of air pockets, I think it falls pretty fast. What do you think?
I agree with that. I mean, you know, in the indicator, look, everything lines up that way. The price pattern, the indicators are overbought. You know, everything you want to see in place. And I really couldn't come up with a, you know, you just mentioned the fundamental case, you know, and the fear-driven aspect of it. I can't come up with a very bullish fundamental case myself. And as I've said before, I think long run, I think fossil fuels, you know, and I'm not a hater of fossil fuels. I just think there's a good fundamental argument for saying that that they may be in secular decline. And that's more long term. Short term, you know, is what we're talking about, but.
Yeah, we want to make money now. We don't care about later.
Right.
No, I get it. No, I don't use, obviously I don't use fundamentals either. But if I'm looking at a position like this to be short, I'm understanding, and I never trade fundamentals, right? I could care less. I mean, I wouldn't even know what they were. I mean, I don't look at them. I don't really care. Basically, what I'm looking for is why is it so stubbornly staying up at that direction? And so then I can use and understand that, you know, in the short term, traders are a little wacko anyways, you know, and you have the big firms, right? I mean, you know, Goldman Sachs made a call of $43 oil back a while ago and it went straight up. But, of course, I think they were buying anyways. That was my personal opinion. What do you think?
You know, Goldman Sachs, sometimes you really have to wonder what, you know, what they're telling their clients and what their public calls are versus what they're doing privately. I often think it's the opposite, but... yeah, who knows? Why it's staying up here, I'm not so sure. It's so far it's within a normal range of, you know, I think the time period that's been up here. Personally, I feel that, you know, my target is maybe still trying to hit, you know, my target, because the way my targets work is the pattern doesn't really complete until the line is hit. And I think it's trying to complete its pattern.
I got to cut you off. We're waiting for Matt Demeter because the oil won't go down until it says it is. This is The Bubba Show with Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Wallace.
Heading down south to the land of the pines and
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the man himself, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And he's been talking to us every week about his gold special, and gold is starting to descend a little bit. And I don't know where the target is because he won't tell me either. But we can see it's breaking down. Matt, tell us about the gold special, what you're looking for, and how we get involved.
Okay, so for the gold special, basically, you know, our premise is that gold has not bottomed. Gold did not hit our target low back in December or January at those lows. So for us, it's an incomplete pattern to the downside. So we know exactly where the line is, and when gold approaches that line, we're going to send out a text and an email to anybody that signs up, and a sign up is free. And then we have to be right about our call. So when the call that we send out, it's going to say, here's the price, and we have to be within 3% of that price, the actual low, and we have to then see a rally of at least 20%. If we both those things occur, then we will charge $49. Otherwise, it remains free.
And so I can make $50,000 for your $49. Not bad. So, you know, Matt, we look at, you know, a lot of things, and of course, we see the British pound just absolutely getting massacred. And of course, I stepped in on I forget what day it was. One day last week, right after the lows, and I think it might have been Thursday morning or Wednesday night. And of course, we had a little pop. Now we've come back down to that area, but I think this 122 area in the pound looks pretty good. What are you thinking?
I absolutely agree with that. In our, you know, in our service, we've been saying, you know, we weren't close yet, but when we got to one, we said 120 to 125 is where we were seeing the bottom, and we actually went a little bit, you know, the spike that we got, the, you know, the flash crash got roughly to 118, depending on which, you know, quote service you're looking at, but that's within the margin of error. I agree. Long story short, I agree. We're very long the pound at this point. Commercials are also very long the pound, and it looks like the flash crash was caused by at least one trader getting blown up in their position, their long position. So that's likely out of the mix now. I think it's possible that we retrace to the downside, maybe all the way down to 118. But I think that would be it. I think, you know, the upside is much larger here than the downside is.
Oh, I agree. You know, one of the things we always have, I mean, I even believe it just in the general markets, the downside in this case is much bigger than the upside. We could go up, but I think the risk lies to the downside. And I think in the pound, the risk lies if you're short. I mean, you know, it has a much better chance, even out of just a sure natural bouncing, to run to the upside, even if it's a quick short covering rally, and that thing has been flying around. And, you know, that brings me to the dollar. Now, you know, you and I have had not a disagreement. We're both kind of in agreement of where the dollar is going to go, and I think the dollar is going to the buck, okay, just because I just think it gets this close, and it's not going to let it go without bringing it in and trying to torture a few people along the way. I think the commodity markets have kind of already priced that in, and we're getting more natural action. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with what you've been talking about, that about how you felt a lot of commodities have already priced in a higher dollar, and I think that was pretty accurate. As far as how far can a dollar continue going up, I would say it cannot go above roughly 102. It can, you know, the thing is where we are, we have two resistance targets. One's right here in the 98-99 range, and the other is at roughly 102. So I don't see, you know, that's the thing. There's, if it wants to go to that second target up at 102, it could give it a shot. From way I'm looking at it, I think more likely it's gonna die somewhere between 98-99 first. We'll fall, you know, we'll screw around, you know, at lower levels first, and we'll bounce back up and try to get, you know, the buck or a little bit higher later. But we'll see. You know, either way, I think it's, you know, we're extended towards the top of the range. I think downside is now larger than the upside. If you look at what the commercials are doing, and that's very interesting too. The commercials are heavy short. They doubled their short position. They were already fairly heavily short going to this last COT report, and now they've doubled that position. And what's interesting too about that is it's only four traders. There's only four commercial traders that are responsible for the entire net short position in the dollar, which is amazing. That's highly, highly concentrated. And it, you know, it should be, it actually should be illegal based upon commodity law. But, you know, nobody enforces that anymore anyway. Look at gold and silver. It's the same problem, particularly silver. But, you know, it's a highly concentrated short by four big banks. So I'm not sure who they are. I have guesses, but I'm not going to say who. But, they're betting on a downside move in the dollar.
Well, we could all guess. I mean, we know there's a bunch of crooks. Look, it's great to make a big trade because if you're wrong, you get bailed out by the taxpayers anyway. So what difference does it make?
Right.
I mean, really, I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, they're too big to fail. So if they fail, you know, with these big trades, and we know that they very rarely fail, and they'll get trapped one day, but they've already made so much money. All right, so you're very right last week on the cattle markets, and you felt that there was more room to the downside. And of course, I've told my people that as long as they keep making new lows, I can't get bullish. I'm not going to try to fish the bottom. I think we're probably close. I'm thinking we're getting to a place where more of the risk is by being short now. But I wouldn't initiate a new short position. I would not be a buyer here yet. I think that, you know, you've got to see some base building here. What do you see?
Well, I feel satisfied that cattle is either at a low or it has a little bit left of the downside. And by a little bit, I just mean, you know, maybe another 2%, and that's it. We've been looking at a target of around 95. We got to 96, just right around 96 last week. And I think that's it. I think now I'm turning bullish. I'm ready to get bullish on cattle. Hogs, not yet. Hogs, I think, does have more room to the downside, but cattle, I'm getting bullish.
Would you now? Let's talk about how you trade it. Now you made. Now would you sit here and would you step in now and buy, or would you try to wait to see until it kind of held a bottom for a day or two to kind of get a feel for it? How do you handle that stuff?
Well, for me, you know, my patterns are you know sometimes they can be very very exact. And and I'll have a line that if we break it, you know, then, you know, if we have a support line that we're targeting, we want to buy there, we will. And then if we break a little bit below, then we'll stop out because the pattern's been broken. But in this case, we haven't broken that bottom line. And, I'm looking actually to buy this week.
Okay.
And if we break, you know, say if we break below, you know, 94, 93, then it'll be clear we've gone through the line, and then, you know, we'll stop out.
All right.
That's how we manage the risk of that.
All right. So you buy when the target is hit, and you then will use your stop to take you out. And that makes sense. That's a good way to look at it. Well, and of course, grains had a big week last week, and I thought obviously wheat had a great move, and I think it's got higher to go, but I think it's come to a near-term resistance. I think corn, that 345 level we talked about last week, we really busted it up pretty good, and of course soybeans stay in that $9.40 to $10 range. What are you seeing?
I was a little bit skeptical about corn, and obviously it's, you know, popped through where I thought it should respect. It's more of a pivot level, so not a hardcore, you know, resistance line, but I still think with, you know, it sort of give corn a benefit of the doubt now. I think it's going to go at least a little bit higher. Wheat, I think, of the grains, you know, I've always been saying, I've been more bullish of wheat than the others. I think wheat has the potential that it hit a long-term low. I don't feel the same way about corn or soybeans. And I guess if I was to be, you know, the most bearish would be soybeans, then I would be sort of modestly bullish corn for the short term, a little more bearish, you know, a little more long term. And wheat, I'm just, you know, I'm bullish in short and long term. But I think of the three, wheat would be the one I'd be getting long. If we see a short term pullback like you think, then I think that'd be a great opportunity to get long.
No, I just think, you know, look, I mean, you were spot on. You and I both, like, we didn't talk about it. We came out with the same level, 345. I was bullish it would get 3-4 through 345, and you said, hey, that's something I got to watch, and if it gets through there, I'm not getting into it. And that's why Matt Demeter is our expert who brings us his raw opinion just based on the charts every week. Matt, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much.
It's always great to be here. Thanks, Todd.
This has been Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Make sure you go check out his gold special. I'm already in. I'm a buyer. I want to make sure we get in and make sure when you miss a show, LibertyTalk.fm. Get you the download of the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. That'll do it for today. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Turn the noise down. Let the soul.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.